This is Jason, known by night as Udvernoki.
Hi, this is Chris the Tingler Caper.
And this is Peter Surplus Gamer Silk.
And the second episode of Tales of Monkey Island came out this past Thursday. So what did we think about it?
First, as I totally failed to do in the first podcast, I should warn anyone who hasn't played both episodes that we were going to be talking some major spoilers.
There's nothing held back here. We're just going to have a full-on discussion of the whole thing.
Spoilers from 3, 2, 1. What about that ending then? God! Manatee!
Yeah.
It's a great ending.
It was a great ending, yeah.
I've been wanting to talk about it since I finished it. But I just afraid to do it on the forum itself.
Yeah. I mean, I assume that is the Leviathan that is mentioned in the title of the next chapter. I mean, I didn't really expect to see it at the end of chapter 2.
I didn't expect to see a giant manatee eating the ship.
Well, yeah, I certainly didn't expect it to be a manatee. Jeez, right?
Yeah, I love everything about that ending.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the ending. So we're doing this in completely the wrong order then.
Nah, that's not that. I just wanted to talk about the ending. So
yeah,
I'm just like
it. It was
anyway,
a good ending.
Okay, now we'll go on to general stuff. Anything we generally want to go through?
Here's something that's worth mentioning to pick up from the last episode of the Mojo Cast, which is, of course, we were completely wrong in all of our speculation about
What speculation was that, Peter?
The speculation about the character who would be revealed at the end.
We knew it was Morgan Le Fay, but we were just hoping it was. They threw it as a curve, I think, a deliberate red herring about the.
Yeah. It seemed like it was going to be a recurring character from the past, but in fact it was just a fangirl. So okay, what do we think of the new character?
My first thing on the list.
Yeah. I very much like her. I'm pleased that it turned out to be an original character because we need more of those than we need
original female
cameos and
reprisals.
Especially. And I definitely like the fangirl aspect of her. I thought it was really funny.
Yeah, I quite like the character as well. I want to see a bit more of her until I kind of decide how much I like her. I think it was a good start for the character, certainly. Yeah, the
weird, sexy fangirl I'd written down somewhere.
Well, yeah.
They're also doing interesting things with them. They kind of have the relationship between Elaine and LeChuck, and we kind of have the corresponding relationship between Guybrush and Le Fay, and I'm interested to see how far they take that. If it's just going to be played for laughs, or if I'm.
I think it's safe to say, at the very least, that Elaine is up to more than we're aware of at the moment.
And LeChuck.
And LeChuck, most likely, yes.
I trust LeChuck more than I trust Elaine, based on episode 2 so far.
Really? That's interesting. I know that Elaine is up to something, and we can move. We can move most of this to We can move most of this to speculation, but I really think that the person that will put Guybrush on trial will be Elaine in episode 4.
Before we go to speculation at the end.
Something that's worth pointing out is that this whole kind of the sort of interesting thing they're doing with Guybrush and Elaine's relationship is sort of addressing an issue that some people have had since Curse of Monkey Island. Even though, to be fair, it was probably an issue Ron Gilbert put in everyone's heads, but like the issue that the idea of Elaine genuinely being in love with Guybrush was sort of wrong for the character. Hmm. It's interesting to see Telltale kind of, exploring that a little bit.
Well, yeah, I mean, certainly I hear that most of the advice that Ron gave Telltale about Elaine happens, most of it becomes apparent towards the end of the series, so I think we're going to see more and more of that side of things.
Speaking of Elaine, the one bit I really liked, bit of animation, was her hugging Guybrush as soon as she saw him. I don't know why, but it's this. Mm-hmm. I'm playing like Knights of the Old Republic again at the moment, and there's like a few emotional scenes in there, but none of the characters touch each other. They just stand there and sag and act all sad. But where you'd expect there to be hugs and kisses and things like that, they don't do anything of the sort.
Well, this is Peter Molyneux's whole thing at the moment with Fable 3. He's got a bee in his bonnet about characters touching each other, and he's making a whole game mechanic out of it. So it's not surprising that was kind of noticeable to you, because it's true that characters don't often actually touch in games.
Yeah, I don't know why, but yes. But it was just a lovely little touch. God, pun not intended.
I just think the animation overall in this episode was really good, especially at the beginning with the sword fight. I thought that was really well done.
My favourite LeChuck bit, see what happens as soon as I take off your mask!
Yes, of course.
And again, like I kind of made that comment in the last podcast, like little gags like that are the kind of things that none of the monkey, like that you could only have done in a Telltale game, that like the past Monkey Islands couldn't have done those little timing dependent visual gags like that.
Yeah.
And I just, you know, I love those little moments in the Telltale games. And I definitely agree that the animation is top notch.
Oh, especially in the sword fight at the beginning.
They
actually had a credit for someone who did choreography for that in the middle of that.
Oh, that doesn't surprise.
I was pretty surprised and impressed overall about how epic the game felt.
Yes.
How meaty it felt, and I think as the series is progressing, you're getting more and more of an indication that this is going to hold up really well as a single game. That when it's all said and done, it's going to work really well as a full-fledged, you know, Monkey Island game that does work as a whole.
Yeah, I agree.
And I think what struck me most about this game, what impressed me the most personally, was the way they kind of carried over that island hopping aspect from Monkey Island 2, and they actually made it work, you know, within the confines of an episodic format. Yeah. But I think the way they handled that was really impressive.
Yeah, I could have done without the two completely unnecessary islands in there, to be honest. I mean, I don't know. I know that they were sort of necessary so that you could look around and find the right island that the chest is on. But apart from that, they serve no function. So I don't know whether they could have just saved time and just done that puzzle slightly differently. I don't know. It just seemed a bit weird to me just to have those a couple of islands stuck out there that just did nothing at all.
Why don't you notice that?
Nothing at all.
Okay. Yes.
Well, also having two maps was a little bit annoying for me, but there was a reason for that, I suppose.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But well, just to get to Spoon Isle.
What was the other one called?
Well, there's several of them. There's Row Island.
Oh, yeah, Row Island.
Spinner Cay.
But I really did. I did not see that kind of feature coming. I mean, we haven't really seen that since Monkey Island 2.
I expected Spinner Cay to be a place, but I didn't expect six islands.
Yeah.
No, I mean, certainly didn't. We didn't really see anything of Spoon Isle before. Well, there are a couple of screenshots which now turn out that they were on Spoon Isle, but. But yeah, I mean, it was kind of a new location. It was a bit like, what was the one on the last one? Flotsam Island.
Jambalaya Island?
Island, I mean.
Even the last episode.
Yeah.
Yeah, the jungle, particular.
Yeah, which made me think,
the jungle stood out to me, but at least there was a story-related reason for it. How the Merpre people were the ones responsible for all, like, the ancient, artifacts and stuff, how they are apparently the ones who built it.
Oh, yeah.
Shall we get on to the merfolk then?
Yes, let's do that.
Peter, you can.
Oh, and I did just want to say that in general, the environment art was also just really awesome in this game.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Some people have been complaining a little bit about the character models, how they might be a little bit, some of them are kind of recycled. I think that the environment art is really, like, excellent.
Yeah, the environment.
And
I think had to throw that in there.
I think what really helps that as well is that they've moved to a sort of darker setting, which seems to suit their lighting much better. It just looks all of the, it's there. Sometimes I just thought that the models looked a bit weird in some shots in the first episode, but
they tend to have more success. I was just gonna say the environments do tend to be best when they're interiors.
Yeah, they just the interior ones and the slightly darker shots seem to be lit better. Yeah. And because this whole thing was kind of darker, it just it looked better to me overall. The only part in this game that I really thought didn't look very good at all was one small cutscene where instead of including the whole of Desinge's office, they just blurry shot in the background. I thought that looked terrible, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah.
About him in his lab.
Yeah.
Done.
There were a few examples of that in Sam and Max, and I'm guessing the reason they did that was so that the cutscene could load without any delay.
Yeah, I suppose that is why, but I don't know. It was noticeable.
Yeah, that was pretty glaring. Mm. Yeah.
I don't know. But, I mean, it was like a 30-second cutscene out of a game that was a few hours long, so it's not a big deal. Anyway, we were just about to talk about the Mer people.
Yes, you can fill us in on the controversy, Peter.
The Mer people controversy.
I don't understand how controversy could possibly originate from that.
Okay, so
I want to hear the controversy.
What it basically is some... it comes in a few different flavors, and so the first flavor is that some people are just of the opinion that Mer people, they have no place in Monkey Island, because Mer people are kind of these... belong in the sort of mythological arena, whereas like voodoo and ghost, they are belong in the supernatural arena, and there's a difference for some reason. I don't know. I can sort of see their point. I just think it's a dumb point, really.
Well, I think it is true that Mer people belong into the mythological arena, but I think Monkey Island belongs in the mythological arena also. Well, I mean, I will grant that we haven't quite seen those kind of characters in a Monkey Island game before. I guess the closest would be JoJo the Talking Monkey from Escape from Monkey Island.
Well, it belongs...
And even Guybrush wouldn't shut up about how weird that was to him.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, if you look at the kind of genre Monkey Island exists in sort of a broad sense, the kind of supernatural pirate stuff. I think Mer people fit pretty well into that.
Well,
I mean, we haven't seen giant manatees either, but I don't think... I'll put it this way. I mean, if making a Monkey Island game that's almost entirely a satire of the corporate tourist industry is not controversial, then this definitely shouldn't be.
Well, I don't know. I think that a lot of people argue that that is controversial, and I happen to be one of them that would argue that. To be honest,
I think what it shows is that each Monkey Island kind of has a different flavor to it. Mm. It's kind of have a different direction. I mean, it all fits more or less in the same mold, but I think each game kind of has maybe, I don't want to say its own rules, but it's kind of its own interpretation of the universe.
Well,
and I think being that Tales of Monkey Island is a little bit more in the vein of a genuine pirate story, it's a little bit more serious. I don't want to say serious, but I guess that's the word I'm going to use. You know, to me, I'll put it this way. Maybe the Mer people wouldn't have fit that well for me if they'd popped up in Escape from Monkey Island.
Uh-huh.
Like they did in this game, but I think within the context of Tales and in the context of the kind of world we've seen so far, I think they fit perfectly fine.
Okay, well,
if that makes sense.
Let me put it this way myself then. I think that Monkey Island is in the sort of pirate mythology world. Anything that sort of...
Right.
Anything that would be seen in a pirate legend is the sort of thing that you're going to get in Monkey Island. For the big stuff, at least. The little stuff, you get stuff like anachronisms creeping in and other stuff like that. But the big stuff is sort of pirate mythology land. And that's the... and I think that's why... that's why I and some other people had a problem with some aspects of Escape from Monkey Island, in that the big stuff, like...
But how... I would argue that merpeople fall very neatly into pirate
mythology. Oh, no. I'm talking about Escape from Monkey Island now. I think Tales of Monkey Island is fine, because merpeople are definitely part of that whole pirate mythology thing.
Yeah.
But in Escape from Monkey Island, I think the distinction that people make with that is that, well, this whole kind of corporate satire, big overarching theme has nothing to do with pirate mythology, and giant monkey robots definitely don't have anything to do with pirate mythology, and I think that's why some people had a problem with the themes of Escape from Monkey Island, but that's for the same reason I'd have no problem whatsoever with the with what's happened in Tales of Monkey Island so far.
Now, I mean, I do agree. Sorry, Chris. I do agree that there is a line. Mm. I mean, you don't want to just suddenly turn the Monkey Island universe into a universe of just, like, talking animals. But I definitely don't think that line has been close to crossed yet.
Okay.
Well, so I don't. I think I
that's
can't
just
imagine
the thing,
where...
isn't it? People have put the line in different places.
Sure.
And me, for me, Escape from Monkey Island just went over the line a bit, a few too many times, and Tales of Monkey Island is nowhere even near the line. In fact, I would probably say that so far it is one of the most piratey Monkey Island games yet.
Yeah,
it really is. Mm. I mean, I don't. It might even like compete with the first two games on that front. Even like, I mean, all the Monkey Island joke aspects are all there. Like, you have the anachronisms, you know, you have the fourth wall gags, but I think it's just a little bit more, this game feels a little bit more committed to, like, you know, like you said, being a pirate, a pirate game.
Yeah. I think I should mention the other part, the kind of other side of the controversy, because because some people will not like me if I just mention the people who don't want merpeople anywhere near
just
all.
Just a sec. The only thing I found odd about the sort of the myth aspect of it is that in the first episode, they were very much still myth. They were sort of mentioned as this ancient people that had left these ancient... mythical artifacts all around Flotsam Island, and then suddenly in episode 2 they're real, they're alive, and everyone seems to know about them and can talk to them easily.
Okay, well,
well, Flotsam, the people of Flotsam Island had been stuck there. I mean,
that's true.
Very long.
How much of the rest of the world had they seen?
Yeah, but also there's a thing about this, which is that not many people really mention the merpeople, to be honest, in the first episode. It's mentioned by a couple of people, and they don't go into much detail, so we don't really know that much about.
Well, they leave these old ancient artifacts.
Yeah.
As around, and you assume that they lived centuries ago.
Yeah, it seems as if
they're here.
And as you said before, there's an explanation for that in the second episode, but it seems a bit strange that suddenly there are all these people and everybody seems to know about them. They've been...
No one's surprised.
They've visited the islands before. And the way that I kind of reconcile that in my head is that, you know, in pirate times, the further away you get from this... from this place, the more mythological something, the more kind of... rumor and speculation there is about a certain thing. So, I mean, so far the game has basically been set around the Gulf of Melange, right? So all the characters there are people who have been sailing those waters for some time, and so people like Winslow might have plausibly visited this island before, and so on. But as you get further and further away from Spinner Cay, merpeople are going to become less and less well known, and they'll sort of fall into myths and legend territory, because unless you actually go there and see them for yourself, then it's just stories.
Well reconciled, Peter. I'll accept that. Go on to the second controversy.
Okay, so what you said was actually kind of part of the second controversy.
Yeah,
is that people don't see why they don't like the fact that these merpeople are just suddenly well known and everyone knows about them, and I can sort of understand, but I guess it just saves a whole lot of hassle at the beginning of having this whole "whoa, merpeople, isn't that crazy?"
I'd like Guybrush to have a bit more surprise.
Yeah, I guess
he never met them before.
I guess, but it just sort of saves that kind of audience patronizing moment of, oh look, there are merpeople, isn't that weird? I mean,
well, I think that could have been funny with Guybrush.
I guess so. Innocent. Certainly the merpeople aren't how Guybrush expects him, because he goes off the ship saying, oh, he's going to meet a cute mermaid lass or something. And so they don't kind of work out how he had hoped, so there is an element of surprise. I mean, I think the first time he sees one, he screams. So there is some surprise, but it does all seem a bit casual. I kind of understand that. But anyway, I mean, because of reasons previously stated, I can let it slide. The other bit of the controversy is basically people that don't like the way that the merpeople have been done. They aren't too bothered whether there are merpeople or not. They just think that these ones are not good. And because I haven't really heard much about this, it's difficult for me to comment on it.
What do you mean? What do you mean how they've been done? Are we talking about, like, the design? Or
The design...
I don't understand what that means.
I don't know what they mean, whether they mean the design, the characters. I think one of the problems is that they think that if they are going to be merpeople, because that's part of a pirate legend thing, then they should be at least recognisably like the merpeople that are of legend, and these are a bit too different to their liking. I don't know.
That's pretty dumb.
Having never seen a merperson in real life, I can honestly say they look perfectly accurate.
Yeah, I don't know. Some people just I don't know exactly what their complaint is there, but that there are these people who just don't like how the merpeople have been done.
These controversies, where are they originating? I haven't been reading the forums.
I see a lot of stuff on the on the Monkey Island IRC channel.
On the Great
I see a lot of things on the forums of Telltale and the Mojo forums as well. So I mean, obviously,
so you're more in touch with the community than I am.
Yeah,
anyway.
But the downside of that is that people go to these places to moan about things, and so
absolutely,
it's kind of difficult to read it a lot of the time, and so I it's very difficult for me to stop myself from commenting on every little thing I see when I enter one of these forums. But I look around on those things and try and keep up with what the latest opinions are.
There's usually so much discussion.
Yeah. And you know what surprises me really is that there's been a lot of controversy over the merpeople, but there has not been nearly as much discussion on what they are currently doing with LeChuck, which I think would be much more controversial.
Which is my next point.
And I think the reason this probably hasn't been as controversial as you'd think is because I think doing some kind of twist with LeChuck, doing something different with his character, has been a long time coming. Like, you know, it's about time he stopped being, you know, Monkey Island games were starting to fall into this formula of LeChuck, you know, gets his hands on the latest, voodoo talisman to take over the world.
Let me have escape from Monkey Island.
Of course.
Same thing.
Wow.
It is slightly different. He tries the political route, which is kind of new for him. I don't know. I just think I think that I can't form a sentence today.
well, that's handy.
It is very different, I think, to what has been tried before, and I like that it's different. But I'm surprised that more people aren't saying, I'm surprised
people
that more people are just
then?
Not standing this new LeChuck. I don't have a problem with him. I think
how
this
dare
is,
they not stand
I,
it?
I think I think it's because they assume it's going to be resolved. Realize that his story has something major coming up down the line that's going to kind of put everything into perspective.
Yeah,
I don't think anyone agrees on what that's going to be, but I think everyone realizes that, you know, this is...
Can't stay not evil.
LeChuck's story has only just begun, you know?
Okay, well, I'll speculate on that a bit later during speculation then.
I especially like the voice of LeChuck now. After quibbling over it a little bit in Evil version.
He actually kind of sounds like Earl Bowen to me, talking
especially,
normal.
Especially as Charles Al Charles bad at all. Top of Earl Bowen.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's actually pretty... He sounds right, is all I'm going to say on it.
Yeah, he sounds to me like what a kind of affable, slightly stupid LeChuck should sound like. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what did we think about him being slightly stupid? Is he just...
I love the puzzle where you have to help him solve
the
puzzle.
Well, go ahead, Chris. I've interrupted you enough times.
Yeah, I was just saying I like the puzzle where you have to help him solve the puzzle.
Yeah, I like it. I thought it was
so much.
Yeah.
I have no problem with him being a little bit like that, because...
He always was.
Because that was sort of... you know, if you take everything we know about LeChuck when he was alive from the older Monkey Island games, there's nothing to really to suggest that he wasn't a little bit of a klutz, or a little bit, you know, he wasn't the sharpest knife in the drawer.
Sure.
The one thing bothers me a little bit about the human LeChuck is that when LeChuck was human, he was always he was always in love with Elaine, or he was always desperate to win Elaine's hand. And he seems completely cool with Guy Ritchie being married to her. Now, there could be a very good explanation for that to be revealed, but to me, that aspect of his character was always constant.
Yeah.
You know, everything he did was fueled by his desire to win Elaine's heart.
Yeah, I mean, he was described, I think, in the first Monkey Island game, when you first go into the Scum Bar and talk to people about LeChuck, he was described as being kind of this fearsome, feared pirate even before he died. So I want to see how they're going to sort of reconcile that. And also, I mean, there's something in Curse of Monkey Island as well, isn't there, where he talks about his days before he died. Perhaps, I can't remember. Or maybe it was Escape. It all blurs. I want to see how they reconcile that, and I'm sure that there will be an explanation. They haven't let me down in that respect so far. Mm.
Because the way I would imagine LeChuck, if he suddenly became normal and nice, is that even if he wasn't trying to kill Guybrush, he would still be like competing with him over Elaine. That's what I would have expected.
He did give Elaine that flower, didn't he? So maybe he's just being a bit... Maybe he's taking it slowly, trying to gradually warm up to her.
Well, they're sort of together now at the end of...
Yeah. She's certainly taken a shine to him, or she's at least pretending to take a shine to him.
Yeah.
Mm.
They both have something.
Yeah. Elaine saying that she had to stay at the end of the episode, that was kind of interesting to me.
Yeah.
That was more interesting than anything that LeChuck was doing, as far as I was concerned.
Yeah, I'm very interested in what Elaine is up to. Anyway, that's speculation.
Yeah. Well, we can talk about Elaine in general. This is probably the most Elaine's ever been in the Monkey Island. Well, Escape from Monkey Island, just about. But
no, you're pretty much right. I mean,
yeah.
She's definitely
Same
been given
LeChuck,
a bigger
actually.
Role.
Think about it.
Yeah.
It's the first time you can really sort of go up to and talk to LeChuck.
Yeah. I like how... I really like how Elaine's character is being... Her real character that has been built up over the series is really starting to be respected now, so you get... You really do get the sense that she's sort of going around hatching her own plans. She's got it all figured out, and Guybrush, he can do stuff to help, sure, but she's the one that's she's the one that's got everything worked out.
I've already got
right. That's very much the Elaine from Monkey Island 1 and 2.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas in Curse, she was a little bit more of an unseen damsel in distress.
Yeah.
In Escape from Monkey Island, they tried to make her a little more independent, but like she just kind of came off as nagging.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I think where they're bringing her in Tails is a little bit closer.
Oh, yeah. Fair to her with the damsel in distress thing in the third one. She was a solid gold statue for most of it.
Yeah, that
true
was fair enough. I mean, the one significant action she really does was is to punch Guybrush. So.
And she does almost successfully repel Al LeChuck right at the beginning.
Oh, that's true. Yes,
she is
battling LeChuck quite successfully.
But I guess the point is she wasn't given enough screen time, so to speak.
Yeah. But speaking of that, I think Alexandra Boyd has really sort of taken to the character.
Yeah,
Well, yeah, she's been given a chance to, you know?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I think she's getting better at it. Yeah.
Because I was going to wait and see with the first episode, because she wasn't didn't have very much of a role in that one either.
Mm.
But now that she's got more of a role, she's definitely handling it well.
Yes, indeed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Next.
Puzzles. Yes. Any of our favourite ones?
You mentioned one earlier.
I liked the puzzles.
LeChuck.
That's all I
had. Yeah, getting LeChuck to do the kind of the oldie style adventure verbs to try and
use
get him to do this simple put
on breath mints.
Yeah.
Right, they're all minty now. No.
Yeah, I mean it was a simple puzzle, and it was basically a way of making a very easy puzzle longer, and it was a joke really, but it was fun to do. there were no puzzles that really stuck out to me as much as the monkey one in the first episode, where you're trapped in the chair.
I see what you mean. Oh, the sword fight.
The sword fight was cool, yeah, but I just don't think there are any puzzles that were quite as ingenious as that one, but I thought that the overall quality of the puzzles I preferred in this episode. Just I thought it was they were more consistently good. I don't know what it was about them specifically, but I just had more of a fun time solving the puzzles.
There's one puzzle I didn't get stuck in the first one at all, but I definitely yes I remember now. It's on the little singing manatee using the locket on it.
Oh. I can imagine.
Yeah, I was stumped by that one. Mm. I was also stumped by the sundial. I mean, the dial that you have to take off the jacuzzi.
Oh,
I got that right away.
And and the other one that stumped me was the one where you have to carry the melted bronze.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that did. Over the cliff. That got me at first. I was trying to
think
of ways
to keep
it
hot. That was very reminiscent of the melting grog mug puzzle in the first game.
Yeah.
It was kind of a nod to that, it felt like
the opposite way around.
I was trying to work out a way to get there faster.
Yeah, that's what I was doing, or try and keep the thing hot. I thought, what if you put fish eggs in the gold, would that make it set longer? I don't know. I was thinking crazy things before I just realized, oh, you could drop it from above, that's probably a shorter route.
That's very adventure gamey, though. Yeah. So I'd never work in real life.
I mean, the only other point I had a problem, I think, apart from that, was for some reason I thought that you had to figure out a way to get the rubber tree back to the pile of logs. And
yeah, I was wondering.
As it
that.
Turns out, that there was a much larger puzzle in the game involving that whole thing, there are some remnants of that puzzle left behind, and so it was going to be a much more complicated puzzle than it was. But they cut some of that out because they thought it wasn't good, or I don't know what their exact reason was, but they.
Well, yeah, I did sort of miss that. I can understand that now that I hear you say it.
Mm.
Yep.
Yeah,
but,
so
yeah,
I don't know. Personally, I thought this was slightly easier to finish and slightly shorter than than the first episode. I'm okay with that because I still think the puzzles made me feel quite clever and so on.
I felt the opposite.
But
I didn't really feel that way. It was a little bit longer and harder for me.
Really?
Yeah, but, me too. Yeah.
Well, that's interesting. I can say because of my ultra forum connections and stuff, I can say that the general consensus definitely seems to be that it was a shorter and easier episode, and some people are really whinging about it, like they will, because it's a forum. But
I just see that, you see that about every single Telltale episode that comes out. And it's like never true. I mean,
I don't know, I thought it was
everyone just.
I certainly.
You're always going to have the same, different experiences when you play a game. You're always going to figure out puzzles a little bit faster or slower than someone else.
But I think
as far as the content, it felt equivalent, or at least as equivalent to the first episode.
I didn't think it was so much shorter that I thought by the end, oh, is that all? But I thought there was a note. It took me about somewhere between 4 and maybe around 5 hours to finished the first episode, and it took me about three to do the second episode, and I don't think I was rushing through it anymore. So, and I think a lot of people had the same sort of experience with it.
That's interesting.
All I would say is that I wouldn't like any episodes to be significantly shorter than this second episode. I think that if they're all at least as long as this, then I'm quite happy with their length, but I would be a little bit disappointed to get to kind of wait a month and then get a bit less than that. But so far, so good as far as I'm concerned.
That is interesting.
By the way, I'm thinking of this now. If you go to Steve Purcell's blog, he posted a new piece of concept art from the canceled Monkey Island animated movie yesterday.
Oh, right.
And he titled his blog post "The Leviathan," and it's an image of a giant sea monster attacking Guybrush's ship.
Oh.
So just another you know.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Another indication of how much mythology might play into the Monkey Island universe, yeah. Right there.
Well, sea monsters, again, that's something that is perfectly fitting into pirate mythology,
They just haven't went there yet.
Yeah, yeah. So all this stuff. I mean, here's another way that I kind of reconciled the merpeople in my head as something that could plausibly exist. I imagined that in Monkey Island 2. When you charter Captain Kate's ship, instead of there just being a ship down there, you get down to the bottom of the sea and you have to negotiate with some mer people for them to hand over the treasure to you. And I thought, yeah, that would fit in with Monkey Island 2. That nobody would have thought twice if that had actually happened in Monkey Island 2. It's just because it's new and it's slightly different to what they had in their childhood, that people are very defensive right. about it, very protective about it. It's always, whenever there's something that's just a little bit different to what we've known for so long, it's always that there's often kind of an instinct to react against it. I mean, even though I'm perfectly happy with the merfolk, there was a few seconds where I stopped and thought, merfolk, is that okay? Yes, I think that's okay. Yeah.
I love you having these internal conversations.
Yeah.
do I like this new breakfast I'm having? Yes,
I do. Yeah, it's crunchy.
Anything else about puzzles? Yeah, general difficulty and length we've sort of gone over already, haven't we? Yeah, okay.
I just say it felt right to me. That's about all I really could say about it.
Cool.
We're clearly in the minority, Jason.
Well, I don't know whether you're in the minority.
I don't think we are. I mean,
nah.
Like,
I think the majority of people don't care about the length, right? And
right.
then the
only Pete, right.
And then the rest of us either noticed
That's
it and
said.
Thought it was a bit, yes. It is indeed.
Well, we had to do
said.
One of those jokes eventually.
yeah, and
it's harder and longer than before.
It's only a minority of us that are worried about the length either way. So, it's a significant point, I guess, to certain section of the fandom, but it's not something that we should maybe spend too much time worrying about. Oh well.
Well, if it's very, very short, I'd have a problem.
Yeah.
The only telltale one I've had a problem with that is the first episode of the second episode of Sam and Max season 2.
Which one was that?
That's the Tropical Island one. What's that called? The one with Easter Island.
Oh yeah, you know I didn't.
Moai Better Blues.
Yes, that's it. Yeah, that's the only
one I
felt short to me.
There was I believe there was also a deleted or truncated puzzle.
Yeah, I noticed that more because there's several characters in there which were just pointless.
Yeah, I didn't notice really that was short, and the reason I didn't notice that is because for whatever reason I started playing that episode, got about half an hour into it or something, got distracted by another game, and didn't come back to that episode for another 6 months or so.
Oh.
And then I just finished the rest of the series.
So it felt really epic. So, 6 months.
So yeah, I mean that as far as I'm concerned, that episode was half a year long, you know.
Well, that's what it's amazing what they can cram to a couple hundred megs.
Yeah.
6 months of gameplay.
Music
is awesome.
Yes.
Here's the thing. Yeah. The music, I think, has been excellent so far, consistently. It's just that it feels somehow subtler, and I think that's partly just the nature of the compositions, but I also think it's partly because the music is just softer in these games.
Yeah.
Like,
I think less so in Chapter 2, though.
Oh, yeah, I definitely agree.
The Gilith Cutty's theme, especially.
Mm. I mean, the thing
I'm talking about in terms of just sheer volume, by the way.
I think...
Like...
I turn it up.
Go ahead.
I turn it up as far as volume goes. I tweak the volume quite the volume controls quite a lot when I play these games. I turn the sounds down to about 4 or something, and then I put the speech and the music right up to 10. And the music.
You know
what?
That's one thing. As amazing as I think the audio side of all of Telltale's games have been, the one thing that they still never seem to have perfected is mixing the sound right. I've never played a Telltale game where like the background music didn't get in the way of the voice at some point.
Yeah.
I
do see it.
I never had that problem in a LucasArts game.
Hmm.
That's just an observation.
Yeah. I think my view on the music is that the episode 2 music is quite a lot better than the episode 1 music, and I like both. Don't get me wrong, but I think that the episode 2 music is more, slightly more foregroundy. It has more memorable tunes in there. It really reminded me, in a couple of points, it reminded me of Fat Island from Monkey Island 2. At another point, it really strongly, I think, on Roe Island, where that little shack with the manatee that we talked about is there. That island, I think, has music that really reminded me of some of the bits in Curse of Monkey Island, and I think Michael Land is really hitting his stride with the soundtrack of this now. I think I was really impressed with the music in this episode, and of course the Spinner K music itself was really lovely and mysterious.
Out of curiosity, does anyone know if Michael Land has, like, what's the last game Michael Land has worked on?
He's worked on them all.
From Monkey Island.
Oh, no, but I mean, has he been, like, it seems like he hasn't been working on games recently.
Oh, sorry,
like, it's like
you mean since Monkey Island, right.
I think it's been
right, like it's almost like he's been out of retirement and they found him to work on
Island.
Tales.
Well, yes. Let's find out.
Because
we've
got him here
this.
Tonight. No, we're not. Unfortunately, we haven't.
Yeah.
We're not that well connected, unfortunately.
Hang on. This will take 2 seconds. I'll just find out for you.
Oh, the internet.
The internet, yeah.
The
he worked
friend.
On...
Series of Tubes.
That's interesting. The last one that he worked on before Tales of Monkey Island was SimCity 4. Which came
2003.
Out
2003.
Yeah. SimCity 4.
Isn't that?
Yeah. Apparently he did with other people. He did some tracks for SimCity 4. How about that?
Okay.
So it's been 6 years since he's composed music for a game.
Apparently so.
I wonder if he's been composing for other mediums since then, or if he's taken up, I don't know, another trade or something.
I don't know what he's been doing.
He was doing stuff behind the scene, like helping to create websites and things like that, or something like that.
Hmm. Yeah.
He was supposed to have been doing that with Peter McConnell, wasn't he? Peter McConnell's also been kept busy.
He has indeed been kept busy.
Well, yeah, Peter McConnell has been.
Well,
yeah,
also
he's been very busy.
Peter McConnell's done loads of stuff.
Clint Bojackian as well. Clint Bojackian's really fallen off the face of the earth.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, Peter McConnell, I think, has been way more busy than the other two. As far as doing music is concerned, I mean, he did. He's done loads. He's obviously doing Brutal Legend at the moment, although a lot of that is licensed, but he's doing some music for that.
He's definitely composing a score for that.
Yeah, he did the last two Sly Cooper games as well. And I think there's a new one. There's rumors of a new one coming out soon as well, so maybe he'll be doing that as well.
He's doing a few other console things. I can't remember what.
And yeah, so I don't know. But yeah, I mean, he's got way more titles on his list than the other two composers, definitely. The other two.
Clint Pajacki was at that.
I didn't mean to derail the conversation. Oh, yeah. I just was curious to know where Michael Land's been. Mm. You know, he just kind of popped up for this Monkey Island game.
Yeah.
Which is good.
Which is good, yeah. I mean, personally, if Peter McConnell hadn't already been busy with things and otherwise engaged, I would have loved him to be involved in the project as well, because I have a great... one thing I think about Monkey Island's music is that I think that although Michael Land is excellent and I love everything he does, I think that he gets disproportionately too much credit for the Monkey Island music. Because I think that the
It has to be said that he was the sole person. Yeah, I think he was the sole composer for Curse of Monkey Island, and that's I think the most amazing Monkey Island soundtrack.
It's certainly the
first, second, and fourth games were definitely collaborative.
Mm, yes.
McConnell definitely deserves credit.
Yeah.
But I think if you only could get one person, I think Land was definitely the man for the job.
Oh yeah, I think so. But I have so much respect for Peter McConnell as a composer, and when I think of Monkey Island 2 and think of some of my favorite bits of music from that, a lot of them to me seem evidently like they were done by Peter McConnell, and I would have loved to see him back on this project, because I think that he could have really added something to it as well. But, I mean, it didn't
and
happen,
I think it's,
and I'm happy with what we've got.
I think it's time for somebody to leak the music he recorded for Full Throttle 2 before it got cancelled.
Mm. Well, did he actually do stuff for that? I know he was going to.
Yes, he did.
What was actually done?
He did. I don't know if he was finished, but he had definitely done stuff.
Oh.
I think somewhere in Mojo's archives there is actually a clip. I don't remember.
Well, that's interesting.
Yes. Yes.
One of my biggest disappointments of Indiana Jones and the Staff of Kings was that Clint Pajacki didn't do the music all for it.
Although I did like the music, I like the original music in Staff of Kings. Although
there wasn't
I think
enough of it.
I think they used cues from the movie way too much.
It was
like obviously,
yeah, especially
like it got
really hard stuff.
It got to the point where playing the game was just like, you know, figure out the cue from the movies. But I think what was there that was original was very good. Just Staff of Kings.
Yeah. Anyway. problems. Do we have any specific problems? Lit. There's that repeating character model thing still sort of there.
Yeah, you know what? When I saw that first screenshot that showed the two pirates, I think they were McGillicuddy's lackeys.
Uh-huh.
That's what they ended up being in the game. Yeah. I was kind of irritated when I saw that picture, but when I actually played the game, it didn't bother me. Like it felt like I could tell that their shapes and proportions were very similar to previous characters, but they felt like they had their own personality to them, and you know they did change them up a little bit, and they looked distinctive enough. Like I don't think I'd give any awards for it, but like, you know, Escape from Monkey Island had a serious issue with the distinctiveness of its character models as well.
Yeah.
If we're gonna be fair here, I think Tails is better than the previous game in that regard, honestly.
I mean, but the difference is, this is kind of a thing with graphical detail, that when you get the lower detail you get, you can get away with things being more similar. For example, in 8-bit games, you wouldn't blink an eye if 8 completely identical ninjas suddenly came at you.
Yeah, but there's a difference.
Right. But
there's a difference between a sprite and a character model. Like the character models in Escape from Monkey Island were low res and low polygon, and they looked it. Like in Grim Fandango, it was a non-issue because they were meant to look like, you know, paper mache dolls, and that's exactly what they looked like.
They
but
look
I
all
think,
different,
I think in Escape, it was like if you know, I think some of the more major characters were adequately detailed, but some of the minor characters just kind of looked nondescript.
But I think because they were so low detailed and low polygon, you could get away with them being fairly similar because what happens, the lower detail that you get, the more your imagination has to sort of fill in the gaps.
And I certainly didn't know.
To me, it just makes it doubly an issue. But I mean,
okay. Well, I didn't notice repeated models when I played through Escape from Monkey Island, but I certainly did notice it in Tales. But in neither case did it particularly bother me.
It bothers me, even if the idea of, so far, the recycling of character models or, you know, using similar models and changing it up a bit hasn't bothered me that much, but I don't like the idea that the game is being compromised due to being developed simultaneously for WiiWare. Like, to me it should be you make the game as good as you possibly can for PC, and then you cut whatever corners you have to when you port it.
Well, this is something that's actually worth talking about, because we didn't get to talk
about it. But because they're developing it simultaneously, it's a cross-platform effort, there's inevitably some considerations they have to take, even for the PC version, due to the fact that it's being developed. Yeah. Now, again, that's more of a hypothetical problem for me so far. I haven't seen anything that really bothers me. Like, I can see things that might be examples of what I'm talking about, but nothing has really irritated me yet. Mm. I just think it's too bad to think that, you know, the latest Monkey Island game might look a little bit less good than it could have had it not been for developing it at the same time as the Wii.
Because, I mean, certain people have said that the...
This is coming from a loyal Wii owner, by the way.
And I also have a Wii, and I enjoy using it, but some people have said that I haven't seen it for myself, but they have said they're disappointed with the performance of the first episode of Tales of Monkey Island on the Wii. And that just... It disappoints me slightly, because I don't like to see a Monkey Island game being less good than it could be. And so, I mean, it certainly is a concern. When people say, oh, the game on the Wii, it stutters a bit, and even though that they've made all these compromises, it still doesn't run very well, and the voices sound terrible because of the file size limit on the Wii. When people say that, just for a few seconds, I sometimes think, well, you know, if this was going to be the case, then why did they bother even bringing it out on the Wii at all?
I think the reason is obvious. Strong Bad did well.
Yeah, that's the reason.
I think the Wii has proven to be successful for them. So far.
I think that's the reason, and it just in some of my darker moments, I think that maybe I just wish that it hadn't been successful on the Wii, so that we wouldn't have to make these sorts of compromises, but I don't know.
But, you know,
I'm speculating.
I haven't forked over the $10 to check out the Wii version myself, but I've seen a video of it on YouTube, and it looked pretty much how I expected. You know, I think if you played the PC version and then you go to the Wii version, it's going to be pretty stark contrast. But maybe if you just only play the Wii version and you have nothing to compare it to, I'm sure it'll look... I'm sure it's nothing, like, as bad as some people have been suggesting.
Yeah, and after a while, after the kind of initial wave of forum complaints that we've seemed to be a recurring theme in this podcast happened, it calmed down a bit, and some people actually came on defending it, saying, you know, I've played this on the Wii. I didn't get it on the PC. I've played it. It seemed fine to me. And so I think that my kind of twinges of doubt over whether co-developing for the Wii is a good idea, I think maybe I should go a bit easier on Telltale for that decision.
I wonder when the release date for Siege of Spinner K is for WiiWare. Do you remember what the difference was between the two releases for the first episode?
3 weeks.
About 3 weeks. Yeah, not that long.
But, I mean, on the other hand, you do want the game. The first episode was apparently successful on WiiWare, and you do want to see that,
yeah,
because that's only a good thing in the long run, of course, for Monkey Island and for Telltale.
It obviously is a good thing, and what I really want is for Telltale to be successful, because that means that they can keep on making this type of game, and that means that they'll keep on getting better and better at doing it, which they have done so far as I can see. But at what cost? I just don't want them to make too many compromises to get to that point of being successful, because I don't want them to become known as the company that makes these fun adventure games that are just kind of rough around the edges. And I want them to make...
They've got to make money, yeah, too, though. I mean, the compromises are probably being made for the sake of...
Sure.
Being profitable.
Sure. I want them to become well known for making these really polished episodic products, and I don't want that to be compromised,
yes,
by having to cut these corners, and that's my only concern about it, really.
I mean, there's a sort of a sect of anti Telltale people,
sure,
out there. We have got a couple of them on Mojo hanging around.
Yeah, I've seen them around. That you get a lot of YouTube commenters that are in that sect.
Well, we've been talking for almost an hour. Somebody want to talk about Monkey Island Special Edition before we kind of overstay our welcome?
We'll talk about speculation first.
Oh, yes,
of
course.
We've got any more left.
Okay.
I was personally going to say, how strange enough, the parrot seems to have been becoming my favourite character. So
I don't know whether he was overused a bit in this episode. But
I was actually sad when
he's
died.
He's kind of the... He was like the rubber chicken of this game.
Yeah.
I'm thinking more like Murray, the way he keeps popping up.
He's the banana picker, isn't he?
Right, he's the banana picker, the rubber chicken. More useful than you would have originally anticipated inventory item.
I like the one that was in the initial teaser as well, that gag with the Elaine where he said who would be dumb enough to lose two wedding rings or something like that, and he pops up and does his thing. I think it's a funny little character, if you can call it a character.
Come to think of it, he met a similar end to the rubber chicken, didn't he? Rubber chicken ended up in the soup in Monkey Island 1.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah. I think it was just... it was funny at the end when she does return the parrot to him by a mysterious means. Yeah. Like, great, thanks. Just what I always wanted.
Yeah.
Were we speculating?
That wasn't technically speculation. Right. I just want to say that before we move on.
Right.
Any other speculation that you've mentioned?
I have one.
Okay.
Which is about... I mentioned I was going to get back to this about LeChuck. I think that... Because a lot of people have been saying how they miss the days when LeChuck was truly a kind of a character almost to be feared, especially in Monkey Island 2, where through the whole of that game, Guybrush is kind of terrified of LeChuck through the whole thing, and he can't stand the thought of LeChuck coming back to get him, and the whole and obviously the whole of the final chapter of that game is with wandering around making the voodoo doll while he's trying to catch you. It's set up to make you it is set up to make you jump whenever he enters the room, and he was kind of a fearsome character, genuinely fearsome character, rather than just this kind of voodoo zombie pirate caricature that type thing. And I think that by making LeChuck appear completely harmless in this new series of episodes, they are setting it up so that at the end he will come back more fearsome than ever before. And
you bring up an interesting point about LeChuck maybe being a little bit less fearsome and mysterious as the series went on, but I'm less inclined to blame the writers of the various games than I am to just blame the fact that the more you reuse the same villain, then the less you know, sizzle he's going to have.
Sure,
I mean,
but...
That's the thing I was saying about... I mean, Guybrush being less afraid of him kind of has to do with the fact that he's so familiar now.
I guess so, it was just such a... It was such a good atmosphere about him that he had in Monkey Island 2. You know, and the things that he would say, I mean, it's not like things that he said later on in the series. He told Guybrush that he would drop him into a pit of acid, then take his living bones and build them into a chair, which he would sit in and listen to it scream every morning as a form of torture for him in Monkey Island 2. And I don't think there's been anything since.
I agree with you, but also I just think you reusing the same guy again and again and again and making the formula that, oh, LeChuck's back again through some, you know, contrived means, that kind of lends itself to making him more goofy. I mean, I think that's just a product. I mean, you know, characters become a little bit less special the more they're used. Okay. And, you know, I think LeChuck is at the point where it's time to do something different with him. And I don't know where they're going to end up with it. But I just like that they're doing this.
I can agree.
I like seeing him and Guybrush working together for a change, and you know.
I can agree that is what will happen when you reuse and reuse a character. They it's kind of law of diminishing returns for evil guys, you know.
Right.
But that's why I think what they're trying to do here, what by the end of the series it will become apparent that they might be doing, is a kind of a reset for LeChuck. They're stripping away everything that made him threatening at first, and then they're going to bring him back more threatening than ever before. That's what I predict for the series.
Yes.
That's interesting.
I mean, last episode title is The Rise of the Pirate God.
Could it be LeChuck?
Or it could be Guybrush.
We don't know. That's too far ahead.
I just like the idea of the threat being something bigger than LeChuck. Like the issue, you know, the big scary thing that the Caribbean is facing this time around, you know, it's beyond LeChuck, you know.
Okay, I mean, I can see where there might be forces that are bigger than LeChuck. I can see that working, but I think... I don't know, there is something comforting about LeChuck being the major villain of the piece, whether there are greater forces at work or not. Star Wars in that respect. You've got the big all-powerful emperor in the background, but the people, the ones that will always sort of be facing off, the big duel is between Luke Skywalker and Darth Vader. He's the real I mean, it turns out that he turns around in the end, but he's the boogeyman.
He turns around? Well,
I'll put it this way. I'm okay with LeChuck being the villain of Monkey Island forever, but I'm also okay with him not being the villain forever. I think it's okay to
other things.
You know, we've had so many. I mean, LeChuck, it's become a running joke throughout the series how many times that he's been defeated. I mean, it's become like the point where even the games have to comment on it. There's one of the funnier lines in Escape from Monkey Island was when he's talking to the harbor mistress at the beginning of the game, and he asks her who she's voting for, and she says she's voting for Charles L. Charles. And, you know, he tries to tell her that LeChuck is back, and, you know, she writes it off as, like, political campaign spinning, and she says, you know, besides, weren't you the one who killed LeChuck? And Guybrush says, well, yeah, three times, but, you know...
yeah, well, this is...
I think LeChuck... Don't get rid of LeChuck, don't get me wrong, but it's okay to give him a change of purpose, and I think it's okay to introduce a new foe for Guybrush. He doesn't have to be a Luke Skywalker and Darth Vader.
Sure.
You know,
but again, think this is...
You don't need to force yourself.
I think this is why if they do bring him back as the sort of main villain, then they have to go all out on it. He has to become a real villain again. He can't just become the caricature, oh, look at me, I'm collecting monkeys and doing voodoo on them, silly thing that he was at the beginning of the series. He has to be, at the end, oh shit, LeChuck is really back and bigger than ever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm not allowed. Am I allowed to say that on this podcast?
Yeah. Fuck it. Yeah.
Right. Fuck no, you're not.
Oh, I've got a bit of speculation. Thinking about
okay.
it. I say Colonel Mustard in... No. Largo Legrand is going to come back.
Yes, I think so too. And I think that the little
just
whistling
the little,
of the...
Yeah.
The Chuck theme.
Took me a couple
yeah.
of... No, it's the Largo's theme.
The Largo's theme, of course. Yeah, the little yeah. little whistling of Largo's
yeah.
theme while they're going to repair the...
Coincidentally, just... whistle that theme.
Yeah. I don't...
People really want to see old characters come back.
Yeah, and what does he say after that? He says,
well,
I wonder
yeah,
why
just...
that... that tune popped into my head, you know.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, and that just made me think that they were winking at us, going, "Yeah, he's gonna
yeah.
come
if
back."
If he had whistled the Monkey Island theme, no one would have blinked an eyelid.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
Yeah, that specific theme.
Yeah, why that theme?
It's... I'm gonna be the cynical bastard and say you guys are reading too much into yeah. it. Although, we all know that
choice.
If Largo does come back, Dom has the voice down. So.
Yes.
He's
that's
completely
another reason,
prepared.
Yeah, so they didn't have to find another voice.
It just seemed to me to be a strange choice of theme to just pick at
yeah.
random.
I mean, the Monkey Island theme.
You gotta be careful
fine.
About what you wish for with bringing everybody back, though, because
oh,
we
yeah.
already
wish
know Murray is being back.
Yeah.
That's already been revealed. You gotta figure Stan's gonna show up because he's in every game. It just seems
we
like you kind of wanna. At some point, you gotta draw a line.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I do agree that I would rather see.
Largo, though, is just it hasn't been reused quite as much. He did sort of disappear from Monkey Island 2 completely.
No,
and I'll just call
yeah,
that
right, I think
but
his
you
day
just,
could come again.
Right,
yeah.
but I, it could. I'm not saying he couldn't come back. I'm just saying that you know the game has done a really good job of kind of keeping things fresh and making things new. You know, we've got the Voodoo Lady, we've got LeChuck, we're gonna have Murray. They're doing plenty of. They're giving plenty of reminders that the past game existed, but you know, we're not in the Tri-Island area anymore. Uh-huh. We're in like a whole new area of the Caribbean. We're being introduced to all these new mythologies. I'm just saying I'd be totally cool with Telltale creating more original characters than, you know, reprisals of Largo and Kate Capsize just because it would be cool from a fan standpoint.
Sure.
You got to
I totally agree with you that I would rather see Telltale doing new and exciting things with Monkey Island than just fan service bringing characters back, sure. But if done right, I would really love to see Largo again. And speaking of Murray, I think that we are going to discover that he has been swallowed by the Leviathan... And has been in there for some time and is quite grumpy about it.
I think either Murray or
it.
Stan's going to be in the next episode. I think
it's
about
it's not
time.
Bad. Not a bad theory at all.
I think maybe Stan could be.
Oh, that's interesting.
I think
screwed
by the manatee just as easily.
Yeah, that could happen. Yeah, but I definitely think that I
think one of those two are going to be
pretty,
in the next episode.
I'm pretty sure Murray will be in the next episode because about the time that he did the Twitter thing that he was recording, it would have been about the time they were recording the voices for episode 3. But
Stan's previously owned giant manatee, I don't know, escape routes?
I'd like to see a previously owned thing again because it hasn't been previously owned for a little while now, has it? And I kind of like the idea of him selling other previously owned things, even though it is another kind of fan servicey throwback.
This is really geeky and minor, but when they reference Stan in episode 1, one of the characters. Yeah, they did. One of the references referenced him as Smilin' Stan.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I don't think he's been called that. I don't think he's been called that since the first game.
I believe you're right, yeah.
It was when... mentioning my gun too,
anyway,
that
it was when you...
Nice little touch.
It was when you picked
yeah.
up the... or looked at
yeah.
the cannons or something, wasn't it? That they described as Smilin' Stan's...
I think
whatever
you're right.
it is, yeah. Hmm. Anyway. Speculation-tastic.
Shall we have a quick chat about Secret Monkey Island before?
Yeah, why not? We're over time.
Oh, special
anyway.
Edition? Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we didn't write a review, so I guess it might be worthwhile to kind of share some of our opinions on that.
Uh-huh.
I'll start.
No.
I liked it.
I would have been very surprised if you said, I don't... No, I hate it. Change my mind.
Well,
never liked it.
I don't think, I honestly don't prefer the new graphics at all to the old graphics. Like, I think there's a lot of, I think it was a competent job, but I don't think it was a very inspired job. Like, I think there are a lot of things about it that look really good and a lot of things about it that look kind of suspect. But I really, what I like most about it is that it's obviously introducing people to Monkey Island. You know, it helped reinvigorate the license, and, you know, people who never played Monkey Island before are now being exposed to it, and that's obviously a really great thing.
It is.
The voices, it's like, you know, it's so cool to hear the game voice. It's one of those what if things everyone wanted to see happen
for ages,
just because it'd be cool. And it, you know, the result is pretty much what you'd expect. I mean, the voices are really good, although the fact that the game was never meant to be voiced kind of comes through in a lot of cases, and maybe it wasn't necessarily it might not have necessarily been the most sound idea, but like, I'm really glad that it happened.
The dialogue, that's, which
right,
like jokes to me,
right, like the jokes don't work, like, but like, it's like they clearly did the best job they could. Like, it's not anyone's fault. It's just like, this is what happens when you try to voice a game written in 1990 for, you know, with the intention of being read. And like, I just love that they did it. Like, well, it's just cool that even if it's not something I would like consider the ideal version of the game, like, it's just cool to hear Dom saying all the lines we kind of pretended he was saying in our heads. And I really love how they kind of took the cast from Escape from Monkey Island, where they voiced, you know, Monkey Island 1 characters for the first time, and recast them in these roles, and it's just really cool to see.
Well, I think it's a credit to how well that's, the game was written in the first place that it comes off okay at all when it's voiced.
Yes,
because so many games that were written around that time, it just, if you tried to put voices to them, it just wouldn't even work in the slightest. It would just be terrible because they just didn't have the level of characterization, the level of good writing that was available in Monkey Island. So the fact that it works at all, I think, is an achievement.
Yeah,
I enjoyed it.
And as for the rest,
that's all you have to
say.
Well,
as for the rest of the game, I think they did a good job. Like you, I thought they did a really solid job of the background art. I think that some scenes could have looked a bit better. I thought some of the scenes, one that sticks out in my mind is just the lead up to the Swordmaster's house, looked particularly great. But yeah, I mean, it was overall, I would call it a competent workmanlike job of making an HD version. But I don't necessarily think that it's an amazing transformation that forever will replace.
Yeah, the you know,
in my heart. Yeah.
Some of the detail is lost, but like, it also, you know, it looks better and it looks worse in different ways.
Yeah, yeah.
To me, it's just kind of cool to have another version to look at, because
you know,
people fight over what's superior, you know, the EGA version or the VGA version. You know, there are two groups who still bicker about that, and you got the different versions of Loom.
Yeah.
You know, some people will insist that the EGA version looks much better.
Sure, yeah.
Then the upgraded version. So it's cool to just have like another version to kind of play around with and kind of put in the in the legacy.
And whatever, I think it was done with lot of care and attention, which pleases me.
Right.
I mean, some of the details that they've translated into these bigger HD backgrounds, I just enjoyed the process of switching back and forth just to see what they've done with it.
I think it's worth it with the music.
The music. I mean, I would be happy if I never heard the original CD version music again, and everything was replaced by the new stuff. I absolutely loved what they did with the music.
Yeah, especially the main theme, the lovely pan pipes.
I really enjoyed was the Ghost Ship Shuffle with Peter McConnell on the violin.
Yeah, they went right over the top with that. That was brilliant.
I always liked that tune, the Ghost Ship Shuffle tune, but it was just a kind of a short loop that went over and over again. And he was absolutely right, just to take that further than it had originally gone. And it just because it was Peter McConnell on violin, it almost reminded me, if it hadn't been for the kind of reggae style backing, it could have been like something that happened in Grim Fandango, you know, something I'd hear in Grim Fandango. It was really, it really reminded me of that. It was certainly, it was certainly one of my favourites from the new soundtrack.
Apparently, they snuck in Denny Delk as one of the Ghost Pirates.
Denny Delk actually plays the character of the shady map salesman, you know, cousin named Sven, that guy.
Really? Yeah, he plays several characters, but one of them is one of the skeleton pirates.
Oh, really?
Supposedly Murray.
He's also the narrator, which is totally unnecessary. Oh, but yeah, there you go. That's Denny Delk.
Oh yeah, yeah. That's one voice where I thought, is this really necessary? And also, for some reason, I don't know whether you experienced this, but that voice was way louder in the mix than all of the other voices. I mean, it certainly seemed that way on my television as well, because I played the Xbox version first. It was kind of weird. It would be really distracting, especially, you know, when he does the narration voice reading out the recipe ingredients on the ship. And that kind of annoyed me, that every time I went to look at the recipe, I'd have to hear this cheesy style voiceover.
Yeah.
So I think maybe that was
a bit
overused.
There was a conversation on the Idle Thumbs forums about the special edition, and one of the remarks somebody made was an example they gave of how the voice may have been unnecessary was there's a gag in the scum bar when it's after Elaine gets taken by LeChuck and you go talk to the crying cook, the chef.
Oh, I know what you're gonna say.
And he says that you have and he says that you have love written all over your face, and in the original game, Guybrush turns around and the text, the letters LOVE appear on his face, and it's just this little visual gag, and it's retained in the special edition, but the narrator also says it, and it just
I think it's
not funny anymore.
It's actually Dominic Armato that says it in that particular bit, but I take your point. Yeah, I mean, it's just Dom just goes love and it's quite amusing the way that he says it, but as you say, completely
even less necessary with the more definition graphics.
Yeah, completely unnecessary to actually do that.
I didn't know that's that.
I mean, I never thought.
I don't get the impression that they would have voiced that even if they had the capability of voicing it in 1992.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Similar
1990.
Yeah, that is a good point. Hmm.
Anyway,
but I was happy with what.
But
they
did. I'm just nitpicking. I mean, I like Special Edition. I definitely do not consider it to be the ideal version of the Secret of Monkey Island. But I'm glad it exists.
And
it's just kind of cool.
I tell you what, I do think it's the
to hear the voice.
I do think it's the ideal version of Monkey Island. Reason being, if you just switch to old style mode, you can play it completely through like that if you so wish. So it's got the whole of the old style mode contained within it.
If you're really nostalgic, if you're one of the diehards, even that's not good enough because that's the CD version.
That's the CD version. Yeah, but it's
there are differences.
I mean, but there must be there must be about 3 people in the world who are that nostalgic.
Hey,
sad to come up the stump joke.
Took out the stump.
Yeah,
the stump joke.
If they had been able to do one thing, that I think they should have put back in the stump joke that was so unnecessarily taken out of the
especially
CD
as
version.
It's referenced in Psychonauts.
Yeah,
so many people get that joke now. They put it back in special edition.
They didn't need to do it in 1994 or whenever the CD version came out, and I think that's, if they could have fixed one thing that the CD-ROM version did, it would have been to put back in the stump joke. I'd like to see that again.
I mean, they obviously just took the most recent version of the game and built the special edition on top of it, which makes total sense, but yeah, I see what you're saying.
I mean, they did do it.
There are a lot of little differences.
They made a few tweaks.
There are a lot of little differences between the original floppy version and the VGA floppy version and the CD version that some people get uptight about. So, there are always going to be people who insist that the Purcell close-ups and the older version were much better than the photorealistic versions. And, they've got a couple of gags that got changed and stuff. But
that's kind of why I see the special edition as just sort of the next, you know, the next version you can kind of put in the lineup.
Yeah.
And you can kind of make your own decision.
Well, I think whenever I go back to play The Secret of Monkey Island now, I will definitely play the special edition because...
Yeah, just for the music and the voices.
Yeah, I mean, I like the what they did with the backgrounds enough that I can put up with the bits where I think maybe it doesn't look quite as good as the original. I like what they've done with the voices, even though, as you say, sometimes it's overdone and sometimes it doesn't quite work as well as in text. And I absolutely love what they did with the music, and so all of that adds up to this being my definitive version of the game.
The only thing I dislike is the controls. I feel they've actually made it less good than before somehow. Mm. Especially being able to combine items without reopening the inventory.
Yeah, it took a lot of getting used to me, and I wonder whether they could have done that in a better way. But
you get the rationale. You get that they want to give the entire screen to the visuals, but it definitely having to bring up two screens and then it's not as streamlined as the original game was.
Sure.
And you know that should be the goal, to make it more streamlined, not less.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, above all else, but it's a nitpick, and it's to accommodate console controls.
Well, I don't know even that it is, because I think that
console controls are just as complicated.
Yeah, exactly. I think that they could have done it in a way that was much easier for console controls. For example, I could imagine like you could hold a trigger and then use the thumbstick to go round a verb wheel. That would have worked quite well on console controls, and it would have been a bit like the verb coin from Curse of Monkey Island. There are definitely things that they could have done to make that interface a bit more streamlined than it actually is. And it would have worked just as well on consoles, I think.
Yeah. Are we going to stop?
Hey,
there?
I got one random question about Monkey Island 1. The music for Stan's Shipyard.
Yes.
That was not in the game until the CD version, am I correct?
I believe you are right. Yeah.
Really?
So who composed that? Like I always wondered who composed that, and I was just curious if you guys had the answer to that. Because it wasn't in the original game. So like did Michael Land or somebody just or Peter McConnell just come and compose it? Or was it just some random guy?
I'm trying to think whether that was the only one.
I think.
I think that.
Really? Oh.
I've got the feeling there might have been others as well.
I don't think. Yeah. I think there was no ambient music for the Monkey Island jungles. Like, I mean, for like the cannibal hut and stuff. I don't think there was any music in the original game for that. But they kind of added some stuff maybe for the CD version.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think it was Michael Land. I think it was one of the additional composers.
Right. Yeah, it's possible.
On the side.
They did a good job with that, I think. It's got a very sort of... to my ears, it's got quite a Michael Landy bass line going on in it. Yeah, but I definitely... It certainly wasn't in the Amiga version.
I can't.
Because that's...
Okay, well, the one other thing... As overlong as this has been, the one other thing we have to touch on is the Ghost Pirates of Uju Island trailer. Before we started recording this, we noticed that there's a trailer available for Ghost Pirates. So you guys should go see that. Go to the Pumpkin Post, our hosted site, that really deserves more attention than I think it gets, because Haggis is really good about being on top of all the Autumn Moon news.
We'll check out
the Ghost Pirates trailer.
Yeah, it's
right
a good
now.
Site. I just visited it for the first time before we started recording it, and impressed.
That's awful. Pumpkinpost.mixandmojo.com, guys. Go see it.
But yeah, the trailer.
Yes.
Dare I say it, very Curse of Monkey Island-y?
Certainly.
Well, especially at the beginning. Yeah. There's that. If you had told me that's Monkey Island, I would have said, yeah, it obviously is. But,
well, the trailer design is pretty lame, but what you see of the game is pretty awesome.
Yeah, I mean,
that's about the gist of it.
I felt like I wasn't tantalized enough. There were a lot of kind of disjointed phrases with no... way to get any context of them whatsoever.
No,
about
an animation seemed a bit odd off to me.
Yeah, but I couldn't really get any sense of who these characters were, what they were like,
It reminded me a lot of the Vampire Story trailer.
Yeah.
Germany needs to just get better editors,
yeah.
I guess.
I wanted to leave the trailer having some sort of idea of what sort of characters I was going to be playing, what sort of story, just in very general terms, I was going to be involved in. And to be honest, I'm none the wiser. It hasn't made me any more excited for the game, because I went into the trailer knowing that it was this piratey game that kind of looked like Curse of Monkey Island, and
I have to say,
I've come out of
it's
the,
probably I'm interrupting you, but I think I'm actually less excited now as in the trailer. I mean, before it was always saying about it, but I thought that sounds cool. Like you play three ghosts, where they can't be seen. You have to possess people. That sounds quite cool. But now I've seen the trailer, it just doesn't look that good. No, I don't want to say that.
I mean,
too early.
What I saw looked.
Doesn't show anything.
Yeah, it doesn't show anything.
Make any kind of judgment.
Before I watched the trailer, I knew we were going to get a Curse of Monkey Island-ish game, where you played some ghost pirates. And after I watched the trailer, I still know exactly the same amount, and it hasn't made me any more or less excited for what's in store. I felt like
I didn't get enough of the characters.
Yeah,
I need to know more about how much fun it's going
to
be.
If the purpose of the trailer was to tantalize me, then it didn't do that, because there was not enough of any one thing in it for me to be intrigued about what was happening or
enough about the characters, about the story, or
yeah.
anything like that, really. And the font they used was awful. Things like that. That's a real nitpick, but yeah.
So, I mean, I hope that it turns out great, and I haven't really been following Autumn Moon as I have a lot of the kind of ex-Telltale lot, and so I don't know really what to expect, and I hope it is good, because I like what I've seen of it, but I just can't tell. I'm none the wiser, and that's slightly disappointing.
I'll get it. In case Bill Tiller's listening, I'm definitely going to get it. I'm sure I'll enjoy it.
But we need to hear more about Autumn Moon in general. I don't like how it's like you don't hear anything. Like I want to hear that the company is doing okay and that things are going smoothly.
Yeah.
It does seem strange to me, and I've talked to someone about this before, how they are able to make these beautifully polished looking games, which seem to have this really good presentation about them, and their adventure games as well.
But look at how hard it is to get them made.
But yeah, I wonder. Well, that's what I'm wondering. I wonder how hard they are finding it to get this game made and their other games made.
Clearly, pretty hard.
Yeah.
I mean, it was 2002 that a Vampire Story. They started looking for ago? I mean, how long has it taken a Vampire Story to even get off the ground?
Yeah.
I mean, it was a nightmare.
Yeah.
It made Psychonauts development cycle look reasonable.
Yeah,
I mean. I think that's the trade-off. If you want to make a game, a game with 2D hand-painted backgrounds and do it your way, you basically have to be a starving artist.
Yeah.
And that's the image I get when I think of Bill Tiller and the people of Autumn Moon. Like I love the company and I'm going to play every game they make, and I wish them really well, but it's like you don't get any sense that they're secure.
Yeah.
I'd like to hear news along those lines.
Yeah, I really hope that there's a great payoff for them at some point down the line, because, again, the more these companies do them, because there was a time when LucasArts had the adventure game thing, they just had it down, and they had the people there who just really knew how to do it, and they could get these adventure games out without too much problem, because they were also really popular. And
wistful sound.
Now that they've all gone off in their separate directions, to a certain extent, they've all had to learn how to make games again without this.
Yeah, I know.
It seems like It seems like Double Fine have done a really good job of that. It seems like Telltale are getting better and better doing that. Yeah. And I want Autumn Moon.
Well, the problem is not just it's not just that. I mean, these guys know how to make games, but like they have to make the business side of it work, and those are things that, you know, they probably have very little, especially Bill Tiller. Like, I mean, you know his heart's in the right place, and you know he's a great artist and also probably a good designer because you know he's been working in design, I think, for the past several years as well. But I mean, you know, we don't, you know, it takes a certain type of person to make a good CEO, you know, to, I just like to see all the pieces fall into place.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, it
better than it seems to have been. Happening.
No matter how good a designer he may be, it takes he's struck out on his own, right? And it takes practice to get that down. And before he had the support of all of LucasArts to back him up, and you know, he was working mainly as a sort of an artist as well, which makes a big difference, obviously. It took time with Telltale for them to really nail the episodic thing. They got off to an okay start, but I mean, nobody would say that the original Bone games that they came out with were anything brilliant compared to what they're coming out with now. I don't think they would anyway. Maybe
I like Bone.
I liked them. I'm not. I think they're fine.
I will say this. I get what you're coming from, definitely. But I will say that I think if people who haven't played Out from Boneville since, you know, September 2005 or whenever it came out, and they played it now, I think they would get it a lot more. Because when the first Bone game came out, we didn't know anything from Telltale except that they were made of ex-LucasArts people and they were making a new adventure game. We had no idea about this whole episodic thing, how it was supposed to work. And so when we got this, you know, 3-hour game that looked good and played good, you know, I think it was just underwhelming for a lot of people. It was just like, why is this game consist of 5 puzzles? Yeah. And, you know, what is, you know, I think if you went back and played Bone, I don't think you'd revere it as a modern classic, but I think you'd have a lot more appreciation for it within the context of what Telltale's mission statement is now that we know what it is. And I also will always say that The Great Cow Race is a really, really awesome game.
Sure, I think, and it was
anyway,
a big improvement.
That's my piece.
I think it's, I think the original Bone game, it was good. It was a good start for Telltale, but I think that it's not even in the same league of the sort of stuff that they're coming out with now.
I would love it if they went back and did.
I think it's closer than you might think. I really think Great Cow Race is still, if you just took the games as like individual episodes, everything they've done, I'd say Great Bone : Great Cow Race is, you know, a really solid effort in the Telltale library.
I think it was solid, but I think generally, let me be slightly softer on it then. I think that they have, the curve has been generally upward in the quality of their stuff as time has gone on.
Definitely.
And it does. And now, I mean, even from episode to episode,
I think
even just looking at the difference in quality between the first episode of Tales of Monkey Island and the second one, I think that it's not a massive leap, obviously, but I think it is just a slight improvement in several respects.
I know what we've forgotten to talk about, the last Wallace and Gromit episode.
I didn't play it.
Yeah.
I haven't finished playing that yet, actually, so I can't.
Well, we'll do it next time. But yeah, no, I can't say anything
but
about it.
I think you make a good point regarding, you know, the juggling of the business aspects versus the creative aspects, and I think that's something Autumn Moon is really struggling with, and I think Double Fine struggled with it a lot too.
Yeah.
You know, the 5 years or near 5 years that it took Psychonauts to get made, a lot of that may have been development issues and, you know, getting dropped and all that things, but I think a lot of it was Double Fine just trying to figure out how to run a company.
But,
also,
I mean, Tim
Schafer had never been a CEO before, and, you know, you have all those stories about mass firings and, you know, getting everything kind of in order from a company standpoint before they could even kind of think about making a game.
But obviously, Tim Schafer was willing to take that long over Psychonauts, and in Telltale's case, they couldn't take that long over getting their first games out. They just had to spring into action. So a lot of the learning that Double Fine did behind the scenes in Psychonauts, we had to kind of play by playing these early episodes, which maybe are not, when you look back at them, as polished as the most recent stuff that's come out. And I think that, and I really hope that Autumn Moon get the, because it's taken them an awful long time to get their games out as well, and I think that I'd like to see more of their stuff, because I think they will get better with practice.
And I think the quality of a Vampire Story is high. I think it's totally there. I mean, I had problems with the game. I think the dialogue was a little bit overwritten at times, and, you know, I had some other issues. But, I mean, I think it was as good as some of the old LucasArts games. I'd prefer it to The Dig if I was looking at those games objectively. I think it's about on par with, like, Escape from Monkey Island or Sam and Max Hit the Road to me. But, you know,
it's not for me.
It's not perfect, but, it's a great adventure game, and I think it's, like you said, it's only going to get better. And I just hate to see the company fold before they even get a chance to do that.
Yeah, that's more or less, that's what my long-winded, windy, stupid point what really was, that I just want them to get the chance to grow and really end up making these amazing, really genuinely exciting adventure titles, and I hope that they get the chance to get to that point.
And, you know, we could just being, you know, worrying for the sake of it, you know, fans, you know, they never take no news as good news. They have to hear, you know, they have to be constantly fed good news. You know, they want to know everything that's going on. But, you know, on the other hand, I worry about Autumn Moon a lot. And, like, you know, when you read Bill Tiller's Twitter page, which is possibly the most frightening thing on the internet, it's like you don't get a warm and fuzzy feeling. I just want things to work out for those guys. I really do.
I agree. We have gone on a bit, haven't we?
I think it's a good place to start.
We did.
We were going to talk about...
We went long, but we talked about a bunch of topics too, so...
Yeah. I mean, I expected this to be shorter than the last one. Yeah. We talked about most things in Monkey Island Episode 1, but obviously not. Mm,
there you go. Right. Look forward to chapter podcast number. Well, what is the number of it? I don't know.
Wow. the podcast number, I don't know, we're on six or seven.
Yeah,
now,
on Lair of Love 5 then. But so by that point, it'll be about 3 hours long by the looks of it.
1, 2, 3. Yes. Okay, we'll draw it to a close then now.
Okay.
Okay.
Bye.
Okay, well, we'll see you guys for the next episode.
Okay. Bye.
Bone. Bye. Bye.